Hi, welcome to True Creeps, where the stories are true and the creeps are real. We'll cover stories from grotesque gore to the possibly plausible paranormal, to horrifying history, to tense and terrible true crime, and everything else that goes bump in the night. We're your hosts, Amanda.
And I'm Lindsay, and we want you to join us while we creep.
We cover mature topics. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, everybody. Today we are going to be talking about mushrooms. We've talked about fungi in a previous episode before when we were talking about like scary things in nature, but we've never done an episode on just mushrooms. And I've learned so much about mushrooms and mushroom history, and I'm so excited about it. Like, too excited. We're probably going to have many mushroom episodes or things where like mushrooms are in the mix, if you will.
Lindsay has become obsessed.
I truly have. And I am so excited. But today we're dipping our toe into the fungi world, if you will. So we're going to talk about some mushroom, just like general facts, some history, some different cultural representations. We've got a big scary one at the end. We're going to talk about fairy circles, which I think are just whimsical and lovely. And then symbolism as well.
A lot.
Amongst other things, as we will. If you are a person who is also very excited about mushroom knowledge and you're like, man, I wish they would have covered this. First off, we love an episode idea, so feel free to throw it at us. But we do have what might be too much for Amanda of a list of mushroom topics, because there's conspiracies, there's cults, there's true crimes, there's why is it criminalized, there's LSD. Broadly, there's so much.
I never thought that I would hear mushroom and cult.
No, together. No. But so you'll notice that when we get to the cultural sections, there's some that we just leave out because we're going to talk about them later.
Yeah.
So don't think that we've just skipped over them and didn't know. It's that there's so much.
Lindsay has more mushrooms coming your way.
Boy, do I.
I love when Lindsay picks a topic because she is so stoked to talk about it.
Whenever I pick a topic, you can tell because there are also several other episodes on that topic because I can, like, well, it's either like a true crime case that you can cover once and cover, but I feel like often I'm like, Appalachia, we're going to have 6 episodes. We're going to have a first episode. We're going to have a true crime episode. We're going to have this. We're going to have that, because there's so much cool information. And like, mm-hmm. I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to reading about history and like, why are we the way we are as humans? Sorry, Moo's making old dog mouth sounds in the background. That's not me. I'm sorry. I'm not chewing. My apology is for a reviewer from a long time ago. Can you feel it? But I find it so fascinating and so strange, and you often don't hear about this stuff, right? When are you going to hear about the history of mushrooms? When are you going to hear about where the psychedelic movement started?
Yeah,
you just don't hear about that kind of stuff, and you're going to hear about it eventually on True Creeps and some about it today.
Yeah.
Also, a very terrifying thing at the end, around the end of the episode. Like, I was I'm sorry, what? How big is this? Which is the world domination part of the title for today's episode is what we're referring to.
Right? Well, at first when you were like, hey, Amanda, let's talk about mushrooms. Let's research mushrooms. I am typically anti-mushroom. I hate them food-wise. They're my nemesis, one of them, one of many. But then now I'm like, okay. I can get behind mushrooms for other reasons. They're kind of cool.
We're going to put the fun in fungi today.
Oh. Had I not seen that coming? I should have seen that coming. I'm disappointed in myself. So let's talk about some general mushroom facts, right? So there's over 2,000 varieties of mushrooms. About 25 different types are commercially cultivated for food. And they have some nutritional content too. So they're low in sodium, fat, and carbs. But they do have some nutrients like selenium, potassium, riboflavin, niacin, vitamin D, and fiber. There are over 100 different medicinal functions for mushrooms. It's an antioxidant, and it's used to promote cardiovascular health. Did not know that. It's also used to help prevent or mitigate cancer, diabetes, allergies, and parasites. Which again, like, I wouldn't think that, because when you think of mushrooms, sometimes you would think like little creatures, right? Living on them or like running around.
When I think mushroom, I think whimsy magic.
Okay.
Delicious on pizza.
Ugh.
And all things.
Ew, no. Wrong, but okay.
Beef stroganoff. Ew. And then I think there are so many uses for mushrooms. And then just like good things. I'm not like little bugs up in it.
All I think of is when I have them all of a sudden pop up in my garden, I have to get to them before the dogs get to them. So they stress me out. I think mushrooms and stress.
I'm so sorry.
But anyways, so there's also antibacterial and antiviral uses. And then there's also antifungal uses, which seems kind of strange.
I find it so strange that there's fungi to get rid of fungi. But like, there's good bacteria and bad bacteria, and they can have a relationship. So why not for fungi and mushrooms?
I was going to think you were going to say they can fight.
Oh.
So some varieties of mushrooms can even help mitigate or prevent tumor growth. And it has anti-inflammatory processes. So like Lindsay brought up at the beginning, we're going to talk about some of the cultures as well. So different cultures throughout the world have different cultural significance and symbolism associated with mushrooms and fungi. Ancient Egypt is one of them, and they consider them a delicacy. Mostly royalty ate them, which is interesting. And it's thought to have life-extending properties. So now we have Fountain of Youth and then mushrooms.
I think that that is one of the things that we're going to continue to see over and over is the idea that mushrooms are healing throughout different cultures and that that's pretty widely accepted.
Yeah. And then the art from Mesopotamia suggests that they were associated with fertility, which is another common theme that we'll see. So in Algeria and Spain, rock paintings suggest that they were used by healers. And in Norse mythology, Amanita muscaria mushrooms, which are a sacred mushroom, were thought to connect the realm of man with God's realm. In Chinese folklore, Lingzi mushrooms meant longevity and immortality. And then in ancient Greece, it was thought to help provide strength to the warriors in battle.
Then in medieval Europe, they had a very different opinion on mushrooms. And they named them things like devil's finger, witch's butter, Satan's bolete, which when I first read it, I read it as Satan's butthole. And I was like, why did my brain do that? Like, well, why?
Because I saw that note. When I see it now, that's also what I hear. And
I'm
see.
So sorry.
Just like, which I wouldn't put it past them to name it that, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, they did say witch's butter.
What?
But anyway.
That might be it, is the butter one was on top of it.
Yeah.
We're
going
to think that. And then that O-L-E. Sense. That's it. That's
yep, that's it. That's it. So with names like those, it's very clear that they associated mushrooms with evil and witchcraft, so they were distrusted. Interesting.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about a specific type of mushroom, and it's called fly agaric. And Amanda mentioned them earlier, but she said its proper name, which is the Amanita muscaria, but it's commonly referred to as fly agaric. And its toxicity has been known for quite some time. And the reason why it's called fly agaric is because of its ability to kill flies. And because it has that use, it's often used as a pesticide. When you think traditional red-capped mushroom, that is what the fly agaric looks like. And it's also our episode art for today.
Mario is what I think of. I said Mario, or Mario, as you'd say.
Yeah, I don't know why I say Mario. Something fundamentally wrong with me. But so, like, think standard as mushroom. That's what it looks like to me. So its psychedelic effects became more and more well known. So centuries and centuries ago, people in Siberia were using it as what is being described as an intoxicant. And there were secondhand stories from European explorers that said, hey, we went there and we saw spirit possession. And they saw people who they described as healers using this. And I think just generally, when you think of witnessing a spirit possession, to me, what that says is you witness someone doing something that your brain couldn't understand.
Yeah.
Because, like, what does a spirit possession look like? If you're thinking classic exorcist,
did they throw up pea soup? I don't think that is what happened in Siberia. So I'm thinking that they use that as just kind of like an easy way to describe that person acting in a way that wasn't predictable and that they didn't understand.
So Joseph Kopek, a traveler from Poland, wrote the first firsthand account of fly agaric's effects. Kopek's travel diary was published in 1837, and it was included that in 1797, he had been living in Kamchatka for about 2 years. So during this time, he was sick and he had come down with a fever. Fortunately, a local told him about a mushroom that could miraculously cure him. He ate about half of a fly agaric mushroom, and he said that, quote, "As though magnetized, I was drawn through the most attractive gardens where only pleasure and beauty seemed to rule." Pretty deep.
Right? You're like, I have a fever, I'm not feeling well. And it's like, what if you went to a magical garden? As like, having just recently had the flu and gotten better from it, I think I would have loved to have been in a magical garden instead.
Well, maybe you should have eaten half of one and you could have. It reminds me of what you said in the 21C Savoy episode recently, where you're like, just the colorful language that people used to use compared to now. Now they're like, shit got real. I went to a weird place. And before it's like,
yes,
magical and lovely.
We'll have another account later of someone talking about a similar instance. And it's like, you use so many words and now we have like, you could use one word to describe it and people would know what you meant. But it's just interesting that because people weren't experiencing this,
mm-hmm.
they didn't have the vernacular to be able to describe what was happening to them.
Right, right. So Kopek went on to discuss being fed berries, flowers, and fruit by beautiful women dressed in white.
Okay, man.
What a fun thing.
Also, like, while I'm sick, I do not want strangers feeding me. Even if they're very pretty.
They're just standing over you.
Yeah.
When he woke up from this deep healing sleep, he immediately took another dose because he's like, that was awesome. But this time it was stronger. He went back to this other world that he described. And Kopek recounted that he relived moments from his childhood. And he also saw friends that he had known throughout different periods of his life. So not just, you know, being fed berries or gardens. This time more stuff happened.
This sounds like a transformative experience. But again, if I was sick with a fever, I don't know if I would be like, I would like to relive the highlight reel from my childhood and meet some friends I haven't seen in a minute. You know what I'm saying? There's not too much information on like what he was sick with and his other symptoms. But like, can't you imagine having strep and you're like, fuck, I have to go see my middle school teacher. Like, she was cool, but like, I don't want to do this now.
I feel like he felt better as he was in this like realm, though.
Yes, by all accounts, he seems happy that this is happening. I'm just saying, if this was me, I don't foresee being like, I have a fever, let me take something, and then this happening. Because in my head, I'm still like dealing with a sickness, although this is supposed to be a miraculous cure. So maybe.
Right.
That
right.
wasn't like, maybe he like took it and it was like, one, you're better. And then bonus, you're about to experience some stuff.
Right. Right. Well, I think of anything that would let me sleep or feel better, like I'm game for. Because when I'm sick, I do not sleep. So absolutely, this sounds great. It's going to get better, though. So when Kopek awoke, he had predictions about the future that a priest came to witness.
Fascinating.
I wouldn't be able to predict the future and run around with childhood friends when I don't feel well, but feel better during that. You know, that just sounds fun. Sounds great.
It doesn't sound appealing to me. I think I would just want those experiences, like if I was already feeling like okay and good. Because typically, like when I'm sick, my life kind of pauses around me and the things that I have to do, I have to come back to. So like, I have to do them once I'm feeling better. They don't just stop existing. Like those tasks still happen and are needed from me. So I'm like, okay, I was sick and now I'm in a fairy dimension. Fuck, I've got to do the edit this week. That's what where my head goes.
Same. So by the 1800s, the association between fly agaric and fairyland was very strong. European folklore began talking about how it could also open a portal to the land of dreams. Before the effects of mushrooms were known, mushrooms were associated with fairy tales. And they often show up as, like, furniture for fairies and the fae.
I love it. I fucking love fairy art. I love anything having to do with fairies. It just brings this, like, sense of childlike joy to me in such an intense way that I can't even explain it. Looking for mushroom fairy art during this, what a treat.
Yeah, like cartoon fairies and that sort of thing. Or, like, yeah, when not people like evil paint fairies. Them in cute little paintings and stuff. But then I think of the fae and then I'm like, ugh, I get a little nervous.
Fair, they are not always friendly, from what I understand.
Yeah. Margaret Cavendish's poem from the mid-17th century titled The Pastime of Queen of Fairies has a mushroom as a table. 18th century paintings from Henry Fuseli and Joshua Reynolds depict fairies sitting on mushrooms. And we have a couple examples here. And I will say that some of them are adorable while some of them are terrifying.
Yeah, we'll share them on our social media. But it's just so interesting to see olden time paintings that are of like mythological creatures in this way.
Yeah.
And like the second one is like a little kid and it's just very unnerving.
It's the eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're menacing.
I would also say it's the little like grin.
Yeah.
And that like he has like a really sharp chin, which child babies don't normally have in that way.
Right. Agreed.
So this idea of fairies and mushrooms, it's kind of unclear of where it starts, because is it because they just kind of match the idea of fairies and they look aesthetically similar and it kind of fits together? Is it because people were experiencing these kind of like magical effects of mushrooms and so they tied them to magical creatures? Or is there some other reason? So when you look at literature where there's transformations that seem magical or unbelievable events that don't seem possible, one kind of wonders, could it be because people were aware of the hallucinogenic effects? Because it's unclear, was this information being passed down orally? Perhaps, but we don't really know.
Right. One example of this would be that there's a debate around whether the transformations and journeys in Alice in Wonderland allude to the knowledge of hallucinogenic mushrooms, which I've definitely heard that before.
Yeah, I mean, it also, I think it's fascinating. I've always called it Alice in Wonderland, but it's The Adventures of Alice in Wonderland. I never like put the front part of it in it. But when you look at the Disney version of it, it's very clear that it's been influenced by like psychedelic ideas and tropes, and that drug use is heavily suggested, if not just like overtly shown. And the presence of it seems to make sense in that version and that interpretation. But is it the same for the book, where it's a little bit more murky on what the substances she's ingesting are?
Right. Right. Actually, just recently watched that again with my nephew.
Yeah.
He loves the old Disney movies.
I love that for him.
When discussing hallucinogenic experiences with Fly Agaric, Mordecai Cook says, quote,
"Erroneous impressions of size and distance are common occurrences. A straw lying on the road becomes a formidable object, to overcome which a leap is sufficient to clear a barrel of ale, or the prostrate trunk of a British oak."
Beautifully said.
Wild. One might say that items appear different in size than they actually are.
Again, the colorful language.
Or one could use this. I'm no Mordecai Cook, you know, like he had a way.
I love that name, though.
I mean, fucking right. Mordecai. Question me not Malachi, if you will. Do you know that reference? It's from Children of the Corn.
It's been a while.
Ben and I have Children of the Corn names. He is Benjakai and I'm Linzadiah.
Oh, perfect.
Anyway, so let's talk about the first recorded trip from mushrooms. So it was in early October, on October 3rd of 1799, in London's Green Park in England. And it was an accident. So in the medical report, the man in this story is called J.S. And he was about 40, and he was at the park collecting mushrooms. And he did this relatively frequently with not this result. So he was surprised when the following things happened. But so he collects his mushrooms, which are pretty small, and he stews them with familiar ingredients in a tin pot that he uses. And he makes this kind of like broth for his family for breakfast. And as a note, his family is him, his wife, and four children. And so everybody had some.
Some had more than others, but on average, they each had like a tea saucer full, which is how they described it, which I would imagine is like maybe a half a cup or so. So it's not like they're having massive amounts, but they're having half a cup or so. So around 8 a.m., they finished their breakfast, and this was standard for them. And then they had their morning tea. So then some weird things start happening. So JS was like, what if I accidentally picked poisonous mushrooms? So he leaves the house to get help, but he gets like 100 yards outside and he's like, why the fuck am I out here? And starts wandering around in a confused state. Like, could you imagine, like, you send your husband out, you're like, go get help. Or like, he's like, I'm gonna go get help. He walks outside, is immediately bewildered as to why he went outside, and is unhelpful.
I mean, that happens anyways.
I'm sorry. So someone finds him and is like, something is wrong. And presumably he either remembers what has happened and why he has come outside, or they're like, where do you live? They go to take him home and they're like, oh, something weird is happening here. And so a physician who was visiting London named Dr. Everett Brand came and helped. And so his experience and what he saw was very bizarre. And it was so bizarre that he ended up writing about it in the medical and physical journal a few months later.
How embarrassing.
You're like, by the way, your familial mushroom trip, what a ride. I'm going to tell everyone who will listen.
Yeah.
And so in this particular writing, again, we're 1800s, baby. I learned a fun thing, which was sometimes in like old English writing, the letter F will replace the letter S. But the letter S still existed. So it was like, sometimes it's just there. So at first I was reading it and I was like,
what strange words.
Did I have some mushrooms? Like, what's happening right now? And then I was like, oh, okay. This is what's happening. Google says this is a thing that happened. So then my brain's like trying to translate it. And then we get to like a mushroom name and I'm like, well, fuck, is that an F that's an S or an F that's an F? Anyway, he writes about it in his journal. And so a lot of the information that we have is from that. So at around 9 a.m., one of the children, Edward, who was just 9, began laughing very hard for seemingly no reason. So he's having like these fits of hysterical laughter. And as a note, good old Edward, we said on average, everybody had about a tea saucer full. He had a little bit more than that. So he had the most. And his parents are like, you need to stop laughing. Knock it off. And he can't. Which, if anybody ever tells you to stop laughing and you're inebriated in any way, you're not going to stop laughing. But he's 9, so like I would imagine this is bizarre. And so, okay. Dr. Brand describes seeing the following. To this succeeded a vertigo and a great degree of stupor from which he was roused by being called or shaken, but then immediately relapsed. And that's another one of those instances where today we have a word for that. And I said, like, he started spacing out. Which is like what that is, right? When you're just like,
yeah.
Sometimes you're inebriated, sometimes you're just, you know, spacing out. But like, that's what that sounds like to me.
Mm-hmm.
But so his pupils then dilated so large they were nearly the size of his cornea. He started breathing more quickly, so his pulse would increase. But this was like happening, then stopping, then happening, then stopping.
Yeah.
And he kept putting his hands on his abdomen. But when they were like, are you having stomach pains? Sometimes he would say yes. Sometimes he would say no. Sometimes he would seem confused by the question. Sometimes he would give an answer that made no sense in relation to what they were talking about. And then the other thing that they noticed was that his extremities were cold and he was experiencing intermittent numbness in them. So, okay, this is what little Edward is going through. He is 9. He is tripping. Also, as a note, everyone was fine. We wouldn't make any light of this if there was any children who were really hurt throughout
this. Right,
right. It's like a little bit humorous because they were all okay.
Yes, exactly.
And it seems like the experience was relatively short-lived.
He was having a good time.
He was having a great time, it sounded like. Except for when his stomach sometimes hurt. But so then J.S. is like, I am starting to feel some strange symptoms. Because remember, like, he did walk outside and get lost in what he was doing. So he's already a little bit feeling weird. But he reported seeing vertigo. And then he would see flashes of color. And then his vision would completely black out. Sometimes he would also just see black spots.
That's a little scary.
Then he started spacing out. And his pupils started dilating. Yeah, having completely blacked out vision would make me, like, immediately cry. But so then he started feeling coldness in his extremities, and he was feeling that intermittent numbness as well. But then J.S., so like if we're saying Edward is having what could be described as a good time, J.S. is not, because rather than having like fits of laughter, he's having fits of dread. So Bran describes this as the persuasion that he was dying, and it seemed to come and go several times. So he would just have intermittent fits of dread. That sounds way worse than laughter.
It's the difference between an adult and a kid, though.
That's just an adult.
You know, like
experience.
A kid's like, yeah. An adult's like, I am dying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I am dying and I've hurt my family. Like, I'm sure it was really scary for him thinking, like, what have I done? Because something is clearly happening. So then another one of the children, Harriet, who was 12, began to experience some symptoms as well. But she had only had a little bit of the mushroom stew raw situation, and she was experiencing like bouts of vertigo. So Dr. Bran made them solutions, and from what I could understand, it seemed like the purpose of them was to hydrate them and or to make them vomit, because he's like, you just need to get this out of your system.
Yeah.
And so Harriet and JS felt better after they were able to throw up, but it took Edward a couple hours to be able to like expel everything. So that was scary, but he also didn't feel better afterwards. So Harriet was given another solution with water, and so she seemed to be like on the mend. So after a few more hours of vomiting and taking more of the solutions that Dr. Bran was providing, Edward started feeling better. But the symptoms didn't go away completely. He felt really drowsy. His bouts of laughter were still happening. They were fewer, but they were still happening. And he had a headache, which, I mean, if you're vomiting over and over again, like that will make you have a headache and will dehydrate you, which will give you a headache.
Yeah.
So while Dr. Bran was treating J.S., Edward, and Harriet, another one of the children, 10-year-old Charlotte, began experiencing symptoms too.
He's like, not this shit again.
Yeah, I know, right? And so it's like 11 a.m., by the way, now. Like, we're not that far into the day. So notably absent from this, by the way, is any account of the wife, of her saying anything, doing anything, feeling any of the effects. I find that fascinating that there's nothing about like her in this, just that she was present. I can only imagine the things she has to say.
My mind goes to so many different reasons.
They're like, she wasn't saying anything that I should write down. So, but anyway, Charlotte begins experiencing symptoms, and she's just 10. So she experiences vertigo, and her pupils then dilate too. And she's a little bit delirious, but she refuses to take anything that Dr. Bran tries to give her. So he's trying to hydrate her? No. He's trying to get her to help her throw up? No. And not only is she saying no, but she's physically pushing anyone away who tries to give her medication. Like, she's not fucking having it.
That's me when I'm sick.
But eventually, they're able to medicate her, and she vomits, and she feels better. But she doesn't remember anything from that time period of when she was experiencing symptoms. So they mentioned that she was, like, not taking the medication. She's like, what are you talking about? Like, she has, like, no recollection of pushing them away and being like, you're not gonna fucking medicate me! Nothing. So,
I mean, that's probably best.
Yeah. Then the last child, Martha, who is 18, begins to experience the same symptoms that Harriet and Charlotte did, which is pretty much the vertigo and dilated pupils. But this is about an hour after Charlotte's symptoms.
Yeah, so it's like one by one by one.
Yeah.
The doctor's like, will this ever fucking end?
Yeah.
So once JS started to feel better, Dr. Brand asked him if he could show him the mushrooms that he had ingested. He went to where he had gathered the mushrooms, and Dr. Brand collected some. Dr. Bran then sent them to a botany professor at Oxford, and that person was Dr. Williams. Dr. Williams looked at them with a friend, Dr. James Sowerby, who was a botanical illustrator. They both agreed that the mushroom that was sent to them was an Agaricus glutinosus. But these mushrooms are not poisonous, nor are they known to cause these types of symptoms. They are also not known to have what we know today as psilocybin, which is what makes people trip when they ingest mushrooms. So they can't find a reason why they were experiencing what they experienced. It seems as though they think that JS may have been mistaken on the mushroom that he had grabbed, because this wasn't any known side effects of ingesting that type of mushroom. So because the mushroom that was sent to them didn't seem to have any of those side effects, Sowerby ended up visiting JS and asked him, hey, can you show me the mushrooms? And Sowerby then was able to identify the mushrooms that he was shown as Liberty Caps. And these are now referred to as magic mushrooms. And something that we learned is that they plentifully grow throughout Britain in autumn, which was new to me.
Yeah.
But at least like they had a reason now.
Yeah. One of the things that I thought was fascinating was that in Dr. Brand's account, he puts like it was cooked in a tin pot and then puts a little asterisk and it says, if this was in a copper pot, then we would have considered whether that had like seeped into the ingredients. And so like he points out the variables in the situation to be like, there's no reason this should have happened given these circumstances. What the fuck?
Right, right.
And that's why he shares it, is because he's like, this is strange that like it wasn't just one person. It was an entire family.
Yeah. So they weren't like making it up if one by one they were doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also, one of the things that I found interesting about Sowerby is that he was illustrating plants at that time and was traveling to do that. So he had other plans for travel and changed them so that he could go look at this mushroom because he was so fascinated by the side effects. Isn't that wild?
That yeah. Like, yeah.
Tell me about your medical marvel. I'm going to come look at this mushroom.
Right? What a job. So interestingly, well over a century passed before there was any explanation as to why these were the effects of the Liberty Caps. In the 1950s, a Swiss chemist, Albert Hofmann, studied hallucinogenic mushrooms. Psilocybin was isolated from those mushrooms in 1958 and synthesized in a Swiss lab in 1959. It wasn't until 1963 that psilocybin was found in Liberty Caps.
That's wild to me that it took that long for people to be like, oh, there's hallucinogenic in these things, considering they were everywhere. There's lots of different like varieties of mushrooms that can have a host of different effects, including hallucinations and including a psychedelic trip.
Yeah. Yeah. So now we're going to move to, as Lindsay called it, world domination.
The drama. I had to add a little sparkle.
So the largest living organism that has ever been found is located in the Blue Mountains of Oregon in the United States, and it's a fungi. All of this was brand new to me. I had never heard of this organism, nor did I know that it was the largest organism ever.
I clearly didn't understand how mushrooms worked on a fundamental level before this episode, because I was like, see, a mushroom is a mushroom. But what you're seeing when you look at a mushroom, typically, what's like sprouted up, is it's the fruit part of it. So yeah. It's like the mushroom genitals, if you will, is how I saw someone describe it. And I was like, thank you for that.
Yeah, the spores.
Yeah. I was like, that is a mushroom, but that's just a part of it.
Yeah.
But let's ruin you as well.
So the thing I'm talking about is called Armillaria, and it's also known as a shoestring mushroom or a honey mushroom. So as a note, trees often benefit from having mushrooms at their roots, but that is not the case for honey mushrooms. In 1988, a Forest Service employee, Greg Whipple, noticed that something was going on when they realized that the fungus was covering over 400 acres. They've tested the DNA throughout and confirmed it was a single organism, and it now covers 3.7 square miles of land. Isn't that wild?
That is a massive organism.
That's terrifying.
Truly massive. So this is the largest one in the world, right? Because it's the largest organism. But it is not the only one of these exists. They exist all over the world in different continents. So they're all over the fucking place being just big.
Being just big.
Doing lots of shit. We'll talk more about what they're going to do in a second, but just blows my fucking mind.
Yes. Yes, for sure. So scientists believe that it would be between 7,500 to 35,000 tons if it was all collected. For reference, that would be roughly 152,284 to 710,659 12-year-old boys.
Isn't that like a really big range of 12-year-old boys?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Amanda was trying to talk to me when I was like doing little 12-year-old boy math. And I was like, I just need a minute because I'm doing the hardest math, which is 12-year-old boy conversions.
Oh, yeah.
You know, fun times.
And we do that often when we're doing notes.
Often.
So back to this fucking world dominating mushroom.
It's estimated to be 2,000 to 8,000 years old. So that's also a pretty big range. And just to note, fungus spreads 1 to 3 feet each year. So they came up with the age based on the size and growth rate.
Fucking wild.
Just right?
Wild.
And just like looking at pictures of it too, imagining that big, like that many, I guess, because they look like little individual things, but they're all like connected.
Mm-hmm.
But taking up that much room stresses me out.
Yes, yes. So we talked earlier about our general lack of knowledge when it comes to mushrooms and how they spread, and that like we were surprised by the size of this, but also kind of understanding like how do they grow? Because when I think of mushrooms, I think of like teeny tiny little plants, right? Mm-hmm. Just like the fruiting part that comes up.
Yeah.
No, we're wrong.
No.
So let's talk a little bit about how the armillaria spreads. Earlier, we said it's called shoestring mushrooms. This is the reasons why for that. It's because the way it spreads to new trees is by it sprouts these black fiber-like threads, and they're called mycelial cords. They're also known as rhizomorphs or shoestrings. And what they're doing is they're growing to find new nutrient sources, which are typically trees, right? And so once they get to the tree, they'll get up into the roots and they'll parasitize and decay the root system. And while that is happening, because it's now traveled, the mycelium will grow in mats of fungus up underneath the tree bark. And typically the mycelium lives underground and it's kind of like a network from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
So it grows up underneath of the bark. And when this happens, nutrients can't travel through the tree and neither can water. It's described as like it changes the consistency of like the bark in the tree. So like you can peel everything off like latex paint and it's rubbery. It's incredibly bizarre looking. Like it just doesn't seem like a thing that fits in nature. Like it looks weird.
Yeah.
When you're looking, you're like, what the fuck is this? And it's, again, over 3 miles and growing continually.
Stresses me out.
Yes. Now, when it does kill the tree, it does continue to feed on it, but it might take 20 to 50 years to kill the tree, depending on the tree's age and how fast it's growing.
That's so sad. It's like a slow death.
Yes. Yes.
Have you seen the articles real quick that plants scream when they're dying?
Yeah, I did. I have seen that.
Oh my gosh. Poor tree.
Yeah. So during the fall, the armillaria will fruit and produce what is known as the honey mushroom. So, and they're called that because they're the color of honey. And again, they just look like basic S mushrooms. You might not know that they are connected to this unless you are aware of and like able to discern the different types.
Mm-hmm.
But they grow out of the base of the infested trees and clumps. And the reason why they grow out of the tree is because the tree is trying to push out the armillaria. And that's why it's outside of the tree, like right there, is because it's where the tree has tried to push it out.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
So now let's talk about fighting the fungus, because it seems like we have to. So there have been attempts to get rid of the Oregon armillaria, but they haven't been very effective. The first began in 1970 when researchers tried to get rid of the fungus on plots of a privately owned timber farm. In some spots, they cut down trees and completely dug up the stumps. And if you've ever tried to get rid of a stump, it is not easy. It's very difficult.
Right? Meanwhile, they're like, this is a solution. Like, does this feel like a solution to you? Like, let's dig up every fucking tree.
Right, in a timber farm. So I assume there's a lot.
Yeah.
So a representative from the Washington Department of Natural Resources, Dan Omdahl, said that digging up the trees is an expensive intervention method, which like, yeah, because it takes so much time, so much like tools and sometimes even like construction equipment.
Yeah. When you're getting out like a tree root, like sometimes you have to like drill it and then like break it up in the ground, then pull it out. Like it's not, it's, you know, it's rooted in. Even if the roots are decayed, it's not going to be easy.
No. And then like if it is attacking like the roots and everything too, the roots span quite a bit. So like getting all of the roots up too, I'd imagine that they were trying, but that's really hard in itself. So instead of, you know, using the method of digging everything up, he was suggesting that they just plant trees that can best survive with the Oregon armillaria. And as an experiment, four different types of conifer trees were planted close to a stump of a tree that had been killed by the armillaria. It's unclear what the results were so far.
Again, as always, now is the time I will tell you, Moo is snoring loudly in the background. She's part of Tree Creek's baby.
It's always about this time, too.
Yeah. So it's always around an hour in where she's like, I am fucking put right to sleep by the sound of your voice. But so in the article that we read, there was this interview with Amidal. And I just really love his view on this, because I feel like when you hear that there is a fungus that is over 3 miles long, the human instinct is always like, we don't understand, get rid of it, right? Like, it's like, how do we eradicate this? But for humans, this would continue to exist and spread.
Mm-hmm.
In the naturally occurring world where we are not, this happens. It is part of the world, right? So what Amidal said was, there's a wildlife benefit to the trees. Once they're dead, they decay and the birds begin to excavate them and use them for their cavities. So ultimately, those trees will fall and they will rot and they'll go back into the soil. And he describes it as nature helping nature. And I just think that's kind of like a really beautiful way of seeing it,
mm-hmm.
because some of these trees are hundreds of years old and it's always like, oh no, it's an old tree. I don't want to get rid of it. And one of the concerns in this area, it's not just like, oh, we want to preserve the forest. It's timber. Specifically, right? They want to cut these trees down, and they can't do that because they can't use them for any purpose because they're completely infested with this fungus. So it's kind of like, sorry, humans, you don't get to use these trees. These trees are for nature, which I think is kind of lovely.
I still think of them screaming.
Yes, but maybe they know it's a noble death.
I like the poetic way you just made it sound.
Thanks.
It makes sense.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about fairy circles earlier when we were talking about fairies and such, but I feel like it makes sense to talk about them here because of what they actually are. So if you've ever seen a fairy circle, it's typically like a circle-ish shape of mushrooms that are sprouting up from the ground. And a lot of times they'll just appear like overnight. They'll just kind of like pop up. And in folklore, they're thought to be a gathering place for fae or other mystical beings. And then others say that stepping inside a fairy ring, if you're a human, could open a portal to another realm, or it could open you up to encounters with magical creatures. A delight.
We were always told to stay away from them as kids.
Yes. I mean, like, generally, you don't step inside of a fairy circle. Like, it's not, you're not supposed to do that. And just as a different kind of perspective, in Germany, people thought that fairy rings were witches' rings and that they were hazardous and evil. And they believed that that is where the witches had danced on Walpurgis Night, which we've talked about in a previous episode. But people wouldn't walk near the rings, and they wouldn't even let their cows graze in pastures where there had been fairy rings, or witches' rings, as they called them. And they didn't because they thought that it would affect the milk from the cows.
Yeah, they'd be possessed, right?
Right? Possessed milk. So there's actually a very simple scientific explanation for why the mushroom rings occur.
Magic is what it is. Just magic. I mean,
magic, baby. But also, like, what is nature if not, like, fucking magical?
Yeah.
The idea that that's how this works. But, like, so there's the full mushroom underground, and it grows those little threads like we talked about earlier. And it grows in a circle because they're all part of the same actual organism. So you see a whole bunch of different little mushroom caps, but that's all one organism. And it just spurts out these different threads that create stems up through the earth, which, what a treat.
I think of, like, roots. Like, a plant root is normally at the bottom and the plant's on top. It's just, like, flipped, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so interesting to me.
Yeah. So let's move on to one of our favorite topics, right? A cryptid.
I mean, yeah, I don't love everything about this, but I do find him very fascinating.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about an asshole cryptid before, too.
Yeah, we did. V-Bob, amongst others. But any of our, like, multi-discussional type of topics like this isn't complete without a cryptid. So we had to have one. Luckily, one existed.
So the cryptid is called a Carry. And it's from the Cuiva people of Colombia and Venezuela. And it looks humanoid, but way bigger. It has a mushroom cap-like hat that it wears, and it's blue, green, or yellow. And it can move super fast. And some say it looks like a ficus.
I found that just so confusing because I was like, humanoid, but looks like a plant. But if you look at some ficus, the way that they're kind of like root-ish trunk kind of pops up, it looks like thick little thighs almost to me. Perhaps a strange description. But I think the idea is that like it looks somewhere between like a plant and a human.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of like the vision in your head.
Right, right.
Also, there is a website called The Book of Creatures that has like an illustration of this. And part of the illustration is its comparison size to a human. And I love it.
It's giant.
It's giant.
I would say this human, though, goes to like its shoulder, right?
Yeah, about. Yeah. But it seems like twice as thick as a human, though.
Yes, yes. So like, I don't know, 2 12-year-old boys. Hi. Ish.
I would say 2.5 because the average 12-year-old boy is going to be about 49 inches because I know that from just fucking memory now, by the way. Either way, 2 to 2.5 12-year-old boys tall is our guesstimation based on this rendering.
It's very descriptive picture. So let's get to the terrifying part. It's diet. It only eats cows. I hate it.
I literally laughed out loud when I read that because I have never seen any cryptid that eats a single animal. And then just like the idea that it's a cow. And then just like in a moment, more of this will be like, oh,
it's going to get better.
But just okay, man.
I want everyone thinking about it in their heads. So this cryptid is so large that it can just casually lift a cow and run with it. So I just imagine it like putting it under its like arm and just running away.
I know. Oh, right. Well, like, what else is it going to do? Like, hold it like against its chest?
Yeah.
Of course it's like up under its arm, like a little like purse.
And then it like runs and it has to be like the stupid run.
Yeah. Oh, also like in the rendering, the arms are, I would say like, think shoulder to head proportion for a human, but like the hands easily go down to its foot and its legs are like the back leg of a rabbit.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the proportionally there, and it has like these two long toes that look webbed, so like all I can imagine is just like thwap 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 sound, and there's like a cow, so it's like thwap 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 thwap.
Of course.
I'm sure.
So just to help paint this picture, cows on average are about 1,100 pounds. And for reference, you know, this is how we measure things. That's about 11 12-year-old boys.
That is a lot of 12-year-old boys. Like, that's a heavy snack or meal.
Right?
It's all you eat. And it's your snack and your meal.
Everything. Like, all parts of the cow. The hooves, the teeth, all of it. So some more items to help you really, really imagine this creature. It is known to come out when it rains. I don't know why. You may wonder, where are they when it's not raining? Typically, they live in tree roots and they travel up through ant holes. So now what I want you to think about is every time you see an ant hill, it's hiding a carry.
I don't need to understand all folklore. I don't feel the need to be able to understand everything that exists in the world, but I do not understand how big creature travels through ant holes. But I mean, we're talking magic now, right, baby? We don't need to explain it.
Oh, they definitely open up and it comes up and then it shrinks back down.
Well, yes. And that will make sense with like when we talk about like the last next little bit in a moment. But I just found that fascinating.
Well, yeah, where else would they be? So the only sounds that they say are moo.
The cow and their predator make the same sound. I will say, I looked up what it's moo with the U and two little dots above it. And I looked up what that might be. What a ride. I added it to like a future episode list because that's its own fucking thing. I love it. I just love it.
So carry men are said to have 2 carry wives. Interesting. All right.
Okay. Love that for them if they all are happy.
Yeah. They're also known to rob, murder, kidnap, and rape humans.
There is not a ton of information that is available on the carry because it is from an indigenous population, right? So when it comes to some of like the more horrific parts of this, it's like there must have been firsthand accounts of something happening to people who have been robbed and women who have been raped. Like, that's just wild to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Kari can be killed by being shot in their kidney with a bone-tipped arrow. Otherwise, they are invulnerable.
What I'm curious about is how one would know where their kidney was.
Who could know?
I'm assuming that it's in a similar place where it would be on a human, but maybe. Like, is it midway through the back, or is it like right above where the hip is? Because that's two different places that are drastically far from one another on this guy.
I mean, this very descriptive diagram of them doesn't really tell us. We need like a circle of where this kidney is. But if you're wondering what happens to them, because maybe perhaps you haven't seen a dead Kari, the reason is when they die, they turn into a pebble.
And like a tiny little pebble, not like a rock or like a stone version of themselves, just like a little pebble.
Interestingly, all mushrooms of the forest, the local plants, and ficus vines are Kari. And one Reddit user by the name of AKIY57 said, quote, "They are wildly famous in my East Village. My great-grandma has seen it countless times, and my mom's sis too. They were terrified, and these things are mischievous, and they stick to your back." How?
I have so many questions.
How? I don't understand.
Again, like, if you're thinking, like, if they're plants that could, like, kind of just, like, a spore could stick to you.
Maybe a piece of them or something, so they could follow you, I would think. But, like, based on this diagram of how big they are.
Yeah. Interesting, though. But earlier, we talked about them going into little ant holes. So, like, maybe they can collapse themselves in a way that is transportable on a human, especially if you can fit through an ant hole, then you could like stick to someone.
That's terrifying because their back kind of looks like a plant, right?
Yeah.
So like you're like, oh, I got something on me.
Yeah. But it also kind of like points again to that transformative nature that people associate with mushrooms sometimes. Like if you think of Alice in Wonderland, where she ate one thing to get big and another to get small, and they're thinking maybe those are mushrooms, and this being a mushroom, that it could do that,
yeah,
because it could elicit that in others, you know? So this is our first mushroom episode. Are you so excited about mushrooms? I hope you are, because I'm so excited about mushrooms. And of course, we had to look up whether there were mushroom festivals. There are a few. There's more. These are just the ones that we could find for now. We'll probably talk about more as we find them and post it on social media. But in September of this year, on the 7th and 8th in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, there's a mushroom festival. And interestingly, Kennett Square is considered the mushroom capital of the world because it produces the highest volume of cultivated mushrooms every year.
Huh.
And then there was a mushroom festival last year in Maryland. I will be looking to see if it will be happening again now that I'm a mushroom enthusiast. And then there's also an Ohio mushroom festival in Hammondsville, which is also in September on the 12th. So should you want to go get funky with some fungi lovers.
Oh my gosh.
At a festival, you could. So, as always, right, we want to know, did you know all of this about mushrooms? Are there more things you want to know about mushrooms? Are you horrified by the idea of a over 3-mile organism that exists?
Yes, yes and yes.
We want to know all of it.
Yes. And just a quick note, we just got back from our spooky trip. We cannot wait to talk about it. We'll have several upcoming episodes about our experiences, and they'll be kind of sprinkled in the next couple weeks.
Yes, yes. So our plan for the episode will be a mixture of us talking about our trip and then having hopefully some audio clips from our trip.
Yes.
So things like the experiences as we've gone or things that we heard in recordings, perhaps, hopefully. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to talk about it and share it. And yeah.
Yeah, we're very excited to share with everyone. Our Patreon's already gotten an inside look at it, but now we can't wait to share it with the rest of you.
Yeah, they got the hot goss and the deets first. They did. But we're going to then share it with everyone else.
Yes. So with that, have a great weekend.
Thanks for creeping with us.
Thanks for listening. And as always, a special thank you to our patrons who support us via Patreon.
Please see the link in our show notes to learn more about how you, yes you, can begin to haunt the dump, guard vortexes, or even become a scorching Sasquatch.
Ooh.
Also in our show notes, you can find the link to our website, more information on our sources, our social media handles, and our merch store.
We'd love for you to keep creeping with us.
So if you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, review, and share the show with your fellow creeps and or ghosts.
I beg of you.
One of the articles that we read said like 200 whales or something like that. And I was like, don't measure in whales. Everyone knows you're supposed to measure in 12-year-old boys.
Right? I do love that now on our Instagram, it seems mainly there, is where we get messages of when people see articles about weird measurements.
I love that. Send them to us always.
Something was like the size of a corgi. And I was like, yes, dying. I was like, yes. I love it because I love corgis. But like, what?
Yes. I love them. Or yes. I like small boulder-sized
boulders.
Boulder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I laugh at every single one you guys send. I think of the Mario Kingdom in the new movie. Did you see it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Or but Mario, if you can understand now.
Look, Mario, Mario, tomato, tomato. One of those is just categorically wrong.
That article has stuck with me. Like, if I forget to water my plants, I'm like, they're screaming and I can't hear them dying. I need to help them.
You live in Arizona. They are screaming if you're not watering them.
That is true. That is true. Well, my indoor plants, too.
You still live in Arizona, even on the indoors.
I know. It's hell. It's hell. One of our patrons just came to Arizona for the first time, and hearing the way that they described it was hilarious.
It's like I often forget just how moist Maryland is compared to Arizona, because when I go to visit Amanda, like, I'm always like, I'm just like constantly parched. My skin's dry. My eyes are dry. My lips are dry. Everything's dry, except like my hair just like is very happy because there's no like humidity, but give and take, it's such okay? a dry experience. And I have to like remind myself of that. So it's like thwap, 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 thwap.